coming up on Thunder Pop.
This is a Thunder Pop Extra. Okay, boys and girls, once again back, Erica Long from the Magic Lantern Podcast. This time, here is an ambassador of the David Bowie fan base. Just lost a great artist. I waited, wanted to do this show right after it was announced that David Bowie passed, but I just didn't want to believe that he had passed. It was kind of like finding out Santa Claus was not real, just hypothetical, and I didn't want to believe it. So I held on for a while. So I waited, said this is an internet hoax. David Bowie really didn't pass away. I'm not doing a show about him because I don't think he passed away. It's going to turn out to all be a hoax. So I waited for the autopsy. I waited for the coroner's report. I bugged people on Facebook, said, you got to tell me, is David Bowie really, did he really pass away? Anyway, he really passed away.
Ground control to Major Tom.
It's not a hoax. So I've got Erica Long. How are you doing?
I'm fine, but I think it's really more as if Santa Claus was murdered in front of you. That's how gutting and terrible it was.
Yeah.
To find that out.
Okay, so you got David Bowie, first musician. You have the record producer. He was a painter. And he was an actor. He sold an estimated 140 million records worldwide. Amazing. He was awarded 9 platinum album certificates, 11 gold, 8 silver, 5 platinum and 7 gold. In the U.S., by the way. Of course, inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as soon as they can induct him in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Interesting guy. I've been watching a lot of interviews with him. Like,
me too.
I got an entertaining dressing room.
What happened?
Well, you got these screens here, and you see other people's rehearsals of all the other shows.
It's all not, the other NBC shows.
It's not like the telly I got at home, you know, where you go right. From proper programs. You got, like, you go to something that looks like ER, and there's a bed there, and there's, like, 2 carpenters eating their sandwiches. It's great.
No, that's ER this week. That's the plot.
Is that the plot?
Yes.
And then all the stuff falls out. Oh!
Yeah. No, it is really weird because you'll just walk by a TV set here and it's called The Feed and it's all the rehearsals.
Yeah, and that's all the channels are on the TV. And there was Tom Brokaw
right.
Doing like, over 500 accidents have happened this year. Think about that. And then he went, think about that.
The only one good thing that comes out of death sometimes of an artist is that we go back and revisit a lot of their work, learn new things about them. In my case, I learn new things about them that I maybe didn't know, or I start to get a new appreciation for them that I might not have had before because there's these little things I missed.
And with that, you get context and distance. You know, you can review an entire person's history because it's being laid out for you. You don't realize at the time, as you're living moment by moment, I certainly never thought David Bowie would ever die.
No, because he always seemed like a person that just got better looking as he got older.
And also, I think you probably have had the same experience. He has been in my life for my entire life. I have not existed in a world in which David Bowie did also not inhabit. And so I grew up as a very young child, being aware of his music and then finding the movies and then going from there. So he's ever present.
Yeah, he was around for a long time because it's easy to forget, me being a child of the 80s. So I grew up with a lot of his 80s music. He had been around as a musician professionally from 1963, starting with Space Oddity. And that's amazing because that means he was basically around before the Beatles.
Well, I mean, by the time I was born, Ziggy Stardust had already come and gone.
Yeah.
You know, got the first major epochal period in his career.
Now Ziggy played guitar, jamming good with Webb and Gilly and the Spiders from Mars. He played it left hand, but made it too far. Mm-hmm.
And so we had already experienced that, and then we came during, you know, third iteration, really.
One of my favorite commercially successful David Bowie songs is Let's Dance. And that video is probably one of my favorites. But I didn't know that that was Stevie Ray Vaughan on the guitar riff. And that's something I learned. Did you know this?
I didn't.
So David Bowie, apparently, I talked to some Texas musician friends of mine that play here in town that were from the old generation of Austin music in the 70s and 80s. Kevin Fitzpatrick, that played with the Giesenslaws, said, yeah, David Bowie, huge fan of Texas rock and roll artists like Jimmy Vaughan, Stevie Ray Vaughan, the Fabulous Thunderbirds, ZZ Top. So he was a huge fan of him and wanted to work with him. And he did have the opportunity and did take advantage of working with Stevie Ray Vaughan.
But I think that enthusiasm marks so many other aspects of his professional life as well, that he was always seeking out new and exciting projects and people to collaborate with. And you see that in music career and his film career.
Yeah, and that's one thing that fascinated me about him, and I didn't find anything with him talking about film aspect of his career, like what made him want to go into that. But what's interesting for me is, as a musician, in his music, he was a bit of a free spirit. Not a bit of a free spirit, he was like really...
The freest of all spirits.
Yeah, the freest of all spirits. So he would make albums sometimes commercially successful. And then other times he made albums that got huge critical acclaim, but they were very experimental, so they didn't have the same level of commercial success. So his career was very random musically, especially in his early days, how things kind of seesawed. And then his later albums, he would take years to record them. He would go and work on the instrumentals and then take off for 4 months and nobody would see him while he's some time to digest everything. A bit of really a free spirit when it comes to his music. And so for him to be willing, you know, movies and acting is so different. You go onto a set, it's very restrictive. It's still a creative process, but you have, you know, a timeline, a deadline. You have to work under a director. You have to work under this producer's criteria. And sometimes you don't get to do everything you might want to do with a role. So from, I think it's more of his curiosity. He's such a curious person. I see that in a lot of his interviews where he was curious about the person interviewing him. As much as they were interested in him being David Bowie, he was interested in them being whoever they were, Mr. Joe Interview. And I think that same thing was what led him to go from being in music, where he could be kind of more free-spirited, and then going into acting, where he was going to work on people's projects and kind of just be another piece in the puzzle for a director. I think it was the curiosity that led him to that.
Well, he chose, and the collaborators who chose him are of that ilk of curious spirit and experimenters. And so he worked with people like Nicholas Rogue, mm-hmm. Nagisa Oshima, so on and so forth. So he's not picking people who are kind of that workaday, let me come in and phone in my part. He's working with people who really challenge him. David Lynch, he did the Elephant Man on stage. Mm-hmm. You know, so he's picking really challenging, fascinating things. And I was reading a little bit about pre-production side of Merry Christmas, Mr. Lawrence from 1983. The director was saying he had first reached out to Robert Redford, who explained, you know, I don't think Americans are going to get this story. You know, even if they give it a little bit of time, they're probably going to give up. So he'd gotten turned down. And then he had made some sort of a connection with David Bowie. David Bowie was in a Japanese commercial at the time.
Junrock, Japan.
Yeah. And so he just reached out to him, and David Bowie said, oh, I'm so excited about this project. Let me come talk to you. You can sense again, as we were mentioning, that enthusiasm, that curiosity. Let's keep trying something new and different and strange and wonderful and see where it takes us, which led in so many different directions, from pieces where he was a key player or the star, like this, or The Hunger, even to Labyrinth, all the way to his really famous bit cameo spots in Zoolander, and then Extras, which is a great, great, great piece. You can find that really easily on YouTube. Yeah.
I tried to go to I Love Video and get Labyrinth, but it was near impossible. It was like trying to get the original Star Wars trilogy right before Force Awakens came out. It was really impossible to get Labyrinth right after he passed away. So I ended up with Absolute Beginners.
Fabulous 50s, the musical for the 80s, the first teenage experience, the West End story.
Do you hear what I hear? Do you see what I see? Carla, I want you to use your imagination. You wake up one morning and you ask yourself,
yes, with Patsy Kensit, and that the theme song is pretty popular.
Great song. Mm-hmm. Not a spectacular movie overall. It did have some highlights in it for me. I mean, for the stage production and the musical numbers were great. David Bowie really stands out in the movie, though.
Yes, I think it's one of those things sometimes where the concept is maybe more exciting than the execution necessarily.
Yeah, I mean, they give him, I mean, he's probably not even the third biggest role in the movie. But he gets top billing. He's in the front of the
right.
When you look at the poster, he's at the front positioning. But I mean, he definitely, when he comes in, just like in Labyrinth, it really...
Does anybody really understand what was happening in that movie? And that essentially he, at least to my mind, was going to have sex with a tween.
Really bizarre.
Just me.
Have you seen trailers where they parody the Honest Trailer?
No.
Okay. Honest Trailers went viral after they did Honest Trailer for Force Awakens. In tribute to David Bowie, they did an Honest Trailer for Labyrinth.
From Jim Henson, George Lucas, and Monty Python's Terry Jones comes a kids' movie just as weird as you'd expect. From Jim Henson, George Lucas, and Monty Python's Terry Jones, Labyrinth. Get ready for the 1980s cult classic that we never thought we'd make an honest trailer for, but decided to do so we could talk about how awesome David Bowie was.
I've brought you a gift.
So forget the meandering plot and so-so acting, because David Bowie steals every scene he's in as Jareth the Goblin King, a magical creature that can only be described as David Bowie.
Just fear me, love me, do as I say, and I will be your slave.
Who will have you spellbound by his magic tricks, dancing, and his, Major Tom. And by the hypnotic way he pronounces baby.
Forget about the baby.
And baby said,
for your baby.
Screaming baby.
Baby, baby,
baby.
Then forget the baby.
In a performance so iconic, you won't even care he's playing a kidnapper with the hots for a 16-year-old.
Their Labyrinth really hits it out of the park. Definitely cover that particular part of the movie.
Yeah, there's a lot to work with from that angle, that's for sure. And his costuming.
Bummed out about the David Bowie news, but I'll tell you something.
I'm sad that that's what we're talking about today.
This is a great bit of escapism for me right now, because I'm getting ready for a slew of weddings, and I'm a wedding DJ. It's my regular day job. And after I'm done here, I have to go to get on the phone with a bride to try to convince her that Bonnie Tyler's Total Eclipse of the Heart just won't work for a father-daughter dance.
Yikes.
She's really sold on the idea, though.
Almost as awkward as many of the scenes in Labyrinth.
Yeah. So we were just talking about Labyrinth. Merry Christmas, Mr. Lawrence. That's one I didn't get to see. Tell me a little bit about it.
That is a film by a Japanese director, Nagisa Oshima, who was also very well respected in Japan. And it's about the British POW experience in this Japanese prisoner of war camp. But really, and I'm stealing this line in total because I think it underscores it most, it's about the camp commander, who was also a Japanese, played by a Japanese rock star, the camp commander is obsessed with the mysterious blonde major. Mm-hmm. It's about one man's obsession with another man's perfection.
Mm-hmm.
And many other things, and not what you would expect. So
when I go drop off Absolute Beginners, I'll have to see if that's available. I'm interested. Yes. I'm interested in that now.
And both Merry Christmas to Mr. Lawrence and The Man Who Fell to Earth are both Criterion titles, so you can get those in really nice collections.
Mm-hmm. So Labyrinth is the chaos that happens when Jim Henson and George Lucas get together.
Well, no offense to Jim Henson, another beloved person from our past.
To neither of those guys, because they created universes that were amazing that nobody else could have even imagined.
They must have been high.
He's what we call an enhancement smoker, because he thinks that marijuana makes every activity that much better.
Mikasa Tsukasa.
Observe.
Did you ever see Scent of a Woman?
Yup.
You ever seen Scent of a Woman on weed?
Or they had huge blinders on? They didn't understand subtext? Or not even subtext, text.
Well, and there may have been a little bit of like the Dune kind of element going on with that movie, where it was the concept that just didn't make it to, like you were speaking to that just a little bit ago, the concept sometimes sounds great, and then it just, the execution of it doesn't always go the way it should have for various reasons.
I don't know. I think they executed it exactly how they intended, and maybe it got away from them. I don't know. But I also have the benefit of having not watched it as a young person, actually, because I was a little old for it when it came out.
Yeah.
So I actually saw it as an adult. Mm-hmm. So I didn't have any of those same blinders that I assume they had on, or no one on the set nudging them and saying, are you watching this? Do you understand what? Did you read ahead in the script? But if I had watched it as a young person, I probably would have camped out at David Bowie's house for the rest of my life. Or would have attempted to.
Uh-huh.
I would have become even more of a super enthusiast than I am now.
Did they ever riff tracks that?
I don't know. It seems like it's right for it.
Yeah. Favorite David Bowie song?
Oh, that's...
Is it just all over the map?
It's all over the map, but the one that comes to mind, which probably will sound kind of silly to a lot of people, but I really love Young Americans.
Oh, that's a great song.
They pulled in just behind the bridge. He lays her down. He frowns. Gee, my life's a funny thing. Am I still too young? He kissed her then and there. She took his ring, took his babies. It took him minutes, took her nowhere. Heaven knows he'd have taken anything.
All night. She wants a young. Yeah. Because for a while, China Girl was my favorite David Bowie song, but then lately it's been Let's Dance. And there was even a period of his cover with Mick Jagger, Dance in the Streets was probably my favorite. But Let's Dance, especially hearing it again after he passed away and watching the video and just all the rawness of that video, how they just, the things he's willing to throw up there and just makes you miss the old MTV.
Turn it on, leave it on. America, see the music you want to see.
I want my MTV. All right.
I want my MTV.
I want my MTV. Yeah, too much is never enough.
Well, I think also in all this discussion of him being such a chameleon and so interested and interesting, I think he had a really excellent sense of humor about himself and about the world.
Yeah.
And so I don't think he ever thought, I might look... silly, or even if so, who cares?
Yeah, he was willing. And that's the magic of a great artist, is that they're willing to do some stuff that sometimes is going to, some things are going to stick and they're going to seem brilliant. Other things are going to be ridiculous. But that's how you get to brilliance sometimes, is going through the ridiculousness and you find magic at the end of the tunnel. And then sometimes things that seem ridiculous at the time end up doing really well.
Coming from a standpoint of just having no ego.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid. to mm-hmm. put yourself completely out there.
You know, one thing I heard about David Bowie that I read, he'd be one of the rare celebrities that would show up for interviews, especially early. And he'd love to visit with the interviewer before it was even time to interview, just to talk about things that were going on, you know, life, what they're doing. He was just a very curious person. He was very interested in other people. And like that just goes right along with what you said about him being sort of not as self-focused. One of the things, too, is he's one of the first, if you think about it, because of all the different reincarnations we had of David Bowie, from the Ziggy Stardust as a major player in the early MTV years. And then as he went back into some more experimental stuff in the later part of his career, he's doing musicals. He is one of the first kind of artists that evolved and reinvented themselves every so often. Because before that, you had artists that stayed pretty cookie cutter through a good portion of their career. And they may have grown up, but there wasn't quite the reincarnation or the evolution. And then other artists kind of picked up on that later, like Madonna, for example. Even though she was always more commercial across the board, she had these different reincarnations of different versions of Madonna. And it seemed like that David Bowie kind of inspired a lot of artists in that way.
He was a performer above all things. And you have to go back to his early training, especially in mime theater. Mm-hmm. And different smaller acting performances he did when he was a young person and trying different musical styles. And so he was never just David Bowie, always something else. I had listened to some interview where he said that it had not necessarily been his intention to become a singer, but no one else was singing his songs, so he had wow. to. But he also found it easier to write for a persona than for David.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Did he write for a lot of other artists?
He did. There are Iggy Pop songs and Velvet Underground. And
mm-hmm. Did you get to catch any of his last works?
In the villa of Amen. In the villa of Amen stands a solitary candle.
Yeah, it's a lot more experimental. Probably will go down as the greatest swan song that an artist has ever written about their own passing.
Yes, and then hopefully as a standalone will become its own piece too. But he was returning to the jazz that had influenced him from the very beginning.
Yeah. And he was an instrumentalist. He played a lot of different instruments.
Yes.
His interviews were almost as entertaining as his performances.
I'd like to ask you something. You know, all right. It occurred to me, having watched MTV over the last few months, that it's a solid enterprise with it, and it's got a lot going for it. I'm just floored by the fact that there's so few black artists featured on it. Why is that?
I think that we're trying to move in that direction. We want to play artists that seem to be doing music that fits into what we want to play for MTV. There's the company is thinking in terms of narrow casting.
That's evident. It's evident in the fact that the only few black artists that one does see are on about 2:30 in the morning or to around 6. Very few are featured predominantly during the day.
No.
That's why even when he was in a bad movie, his presence, when he shows up, like in The Absolute Beginners, when he shows up, you're involved again. Mm-hmm. No matter what's going on. One thing for me is if I'm making a movie, even if it's based off a John Grisham novel, like a law drama, if I can get David Bowie in it, I'm going to figure out some way to get him to do some music.
David Bowie is the firm.
Yeah, David Bowie is the firm, but I'm going to get him to do a theme song for that movie, just like Absolute Beginners. He's in my movie, even if he's like the fifth biggest role, I'm going to get him to do some music for this movie because the movie will be 20, 30, 40% better just because his music's in the movie.
Well, I'm so sad that I didn't get to see him on stage, but I am very grateful that I did get to see him in concert.
Wow. Yeah. Which tour was it?
It was the David Bowie Nine Inch Nails tour in I can't recall if I saw him in 1995 or 96. I want to say 96, and it was in Portland. Yeah, it blew our minds.
And then he toured with Moby, I know, for one round. There was that great collaboration he did in the career and life of Bing Crosby.
Yeah, he completely made up that secondary lyrics that he's singing. He wrote those on the day.
Wow. And that's become a mainstay now on radio during the Christmas holidays. You'll hear that song right along with Last Christmas and Band-Aid and all the other, the U2, Mariah Carey's, and then you've got that song.
What I would also direct you to, one of those things that's been going around the internet too since his death, is the a cappella track, or the just the vocal tracks from Under Pressure.
Pressure pushing down on me, pressing down on you, no man has fall. Under pressure.
Freddie Mercury and that voice, and then David Bowie and that voice together. That's amazing.
And they were also set to record a different song that day, and they wrote that on the day.
You know, Freddie Mercury was going to collaborate. You know, he knew Michael Jackson, had met him a few times, and they were going to work together. They had this, of course, there was the State of Shock that was with Mick Jagger and the Jacksons.
I had the cassette.
But there was going to be a Freddie Mercury-Michael Jackson record or collaboration, but this was getting around at the time that Michael Jackson was really getting into large zoo animals. And bringing him with him wherever he went.
Right.
He had, I think it was a llama in the recording studio. And he may have even had Bubbles the Chimp. And Freddie Mercury was, everything was moving full speed ahead, but that was like it for Freddie Mercury. He could not work in the studio with the animals.
He probably also realized that he and Michael Jackson and a llama would have so much charisma together, probably the world would have imploded.
Yeah. I think you might be onto something there. Could have been some songs that could have come out of that, though. They could have come up with a song about Michael and his animals, zoo animals.
Now, if David Bowie had shown up anywhere with a llama, I would still say, come on in.
Just bring it. Yeah, I'll take that along. That's what comes with David Bowie. We'll take it.
Let's start a llama farm together, David. Let's make some sweaters.
Straight pins, elastic, a safety pin, scissors, and a sewing machine.
Absolutely. Because David Bowie is just kind of the guy you're just like, we'll do whatever you want to do. Just to collaborate with you, let's do it.
Yeah, Iman can come too. That's fine. Just Absolutely. Let me hang out with you.
And you want to open a tennis ball store, and all we do is we just sell tennis balls? Just call it the tennis ball store. I'll do that with David Bowie, as long as he writes the jingle for the commercials and sings it.
Father, is there tennis?
That's the song. Let's me play like a tambourine or something in the background of the song.
Yeah, that's some early period stuff, yeah.
He loves Texas musicians, so say, hey, I'm from Austin. I got a tambourine. Let's collaborate.
He'd at least give you a hearing, I think.
I'll wear the Stevie Ray Vaughan hat. Although the hat will be huge on my head, but I'll end up looking more like Father Guido Seducci than T. Ray Vaughan.
Probably.
If I wear that hat, but oh well, who's counting?
Is that your new DJ persona? Stevie Ray Sarducci?
Yes. It's a mashup between Stevie Ray Vaughan and Father Guido Seducci.
Plays only Bonnie Tyler and Stevie Ray?
It's mashups between Bonnie Tyler and Stevie Ray with the guitar. I just sampled the guitar riff over that. That's it. I'm going to tell that bride, says, hey, we can do the song, but only if you allow me to do a mashup where we put some Stevie Ray Vaughan guitar riffs in it.
Do not suggest if the house is rocking and don't come a knocking, because she apparently doesn't have any sense.
Yeah, and then that may actually end up happening if I did suggest it.
Her and her dad doing a jive of some kind.
Yeah, that very well end up happening. So, yeah, I did see that you mentioned extras. I did look at that, and that was very funny.
Right. It's Ricky Gervais in the series that he did after The Office.
Yeah, Ricky Gervais and David Bowie.
It's the same seat. It's actually the same seat for 60 quid. You paid 60 quid to go in here. You should let me negotiate.
So shit, mate.
And they can still see me. There should be an actual barrier.
Let's go and sit next to David Bowie. He's not getting any hassle.
I'll go and just sit next
to him. Oh, come on. We'll just go and speak to him.
I don't know what he wants.
Excuse me, Mr. Bowie. Can I just say that we are both very big fan.
I can't hear you, love. Come over here.
Hi.
Hi. Hi.
I was just saying that I'm an entertainer too.
Oh yeah. What do you do?
I'm in a sitcom.
It's called When the Whistle Blows.
I haven't known. Is it any good?
Nice shit.
Oh, just riffraff everywhere.
Not going down too well, huh?
It's getting 6 million viewers. Not exactly how I meant it to be, because the BBC have interfered and sort of chased ratings and made it lowest common denominator, sort of comedy, sort of catchphrases and wigs. And I think I've sold out, to be honest. But
yeah,
it's difficult, isn't it, to keep your integrity when you're going for that first...
Little fat man who sold his soul.
The
little fat man who sold his dream.
Probably improvised the song on the spot. And I would think, Ricky Gervais probably is a type of comedian that ad-libs a lot of stuff or comes up with a lot of stuff on his own on the fly.
Yes.
So I wouldn't be surprised. They probably just were great for him and for the comedy, and David Bowie for the music, being kind of in the same leagues. The two together, they just must have had a blast working together. So what else do you got? Anything you can think of?
I wanted to get people really excited about those titles that they may know less, especially contemporaries that may just know Labyrinth, to look back on more serious pieces. Mm-hmm. And of course, The Man Who Fell to Earth is so intertwined with David Bowie, his persona. You cannot separate the two.
Are you the first?
The first one. Visitor? I've always been visited.
Nothing you have seen or heard about David Bowie will prepare you for the impact of his first dramatic performance in The Man Who Fell to Earth.
That was his first film.
He had four other titles listed on his IMDb page, though one of them is uncredited, two of them are shorts, and one was a TV series. So that was, you are absolutely correct, that was his first feature.
The first feature, yeah.
To start out with Nicholas Rogue, you cannot do any better than that for your first feature.
Mm-hmm. No, not at all. It's probably a natural.
Definitely.
So tell us, you all are getting up there in episodes for the podcast Magic Lantern. How many episodes are you up to?
We just put out episode 13, so mm-hmm. we're working on episode 14 as we speak. Doing really well with that, and we're so enjoying it. And I don't think I would have Labyrinth necessarily as one of my choices,
probably.
But maybe I'll do Merry Christmas, Mr. Lawrence, or maybe I'll do The Man Who Fell to Earth. Yes, yeah, so we're enjoying the podcast very much so far. Thank you. What would your choice be after having all of this discussion of these David Bowie films and the different favorites through the 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s, 2010s? Do you have a title that you would absolutely love to explore?
Oh, for the movies?
Yes.
Well, from a parody standpoint, The Labyrinth.
A lot of material to talk about.
Oh, another one that's on Netflix that I had not seen. Basquiat.
Yeah, it's
Basquiat.
About Jean-Michel Basquiat. He's really good in it, too. It's just a small part, and he is Andy Warhol. It's a great film. That film really belongs to Jeffrey Wright, who now is a household name, practically. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so David Bowie's in it for a bit. And that makes me think of another one, actually. The Prestige, he's also just has that small part in it, but pretty fun.
Mm-hmm. The movie that really keeps coming back to me is The Man Who Fell to the Earth.
Yes.
And then after that, I really enjoyed his work on Extras and seeing him do comedy in a very high level of it.
Now, we have a friend who came to one of our regular movie nights where we invite everyone to bring a different title and we do a little roulette wheel
yes.
to see who's going to be able to show. And so she is a massive David Bowie fan and brought The Linguini Incident, but she didn't win.
How does that work? Is it put it in a box and then you just draw?
We have a little, just a website you can go to where you plug names in, and it's like a little spinning wheel to select the winner.
Oh, okay. Amazing.
And so maybe you should come to the next one and maybe bring Labyrinth and have us all watch it.
There would be a way to sneak it in there, yeah, for we get people to watch it.
And make us all really uncomfortable.
Yeah. But then enjoy some great music still, even there. I mean, again, like I said, no matter what movie, if I'm making a movie, I know the movie's going to suck. If it's a bad script, let me get some David Bowie to do some music for it. At least that will be some one redeeming quality. In Labyrinth, still some great music in there that he did.
You remind me of the babe.
What babe?
Babe with the power.
Well, he's also, I think the best part of Labyrinth is his costume with that sort of unspoken codpiece. So that was pretty exciting.
That's the other one. Yeah, I think someone called that the Major Tom.
Right.
And him in that costume is iconic. And one of the things you see after Ziggy Stardust is probably the second most often visual you see online of him.
Mm, yeah.
For better or worse.
And I know who's there when silhouettes fall. And I'm gone like I'm dancing on angels. And I'm gone through the cracks in the past, like a dead man walking.
Wow. Well, I can't thank you enough for helping console me. And I'm trying to do the same for you in the loss of a great, big part of our lives.
Thankfully, we have all the work, and there was so much of it. So we don't have to console ourselves with one album to dissect for the end of time. We've got all of this fantastic work and his film work and TV work, and maybe at some point we'll be able to see his stage work. Mm-hmm. So lots of stuff.
I'm reassured that he's going to be one of the rare artists, and he's a top tier. He's one of the big ones. So you got the Michael Jackson, you got the Beatles, and John Lennon. You're going to have David Bowie. I mean, he's in that top tier. And
easily,
So the people that are walking on the planet Earth that are still alive, that you could put in that conversation, it's very limited. Bruce Springsteen, I'd put in that conversation, that's still alive and walking. From the commercial music world, let's say Madonna. But this is a very small list when you think about it. People that are still going and actually still in their prime, where they're still put. Like David Bowie, he leaves when he was still really relevant, putting out great material still and great content and great artistry. And a lot of artists that stay around into their careers are still relevant into their late 60s or 70s are sometimes just spinning their wheels. Sometimes they're just kind of like they're doing it, but they're not necessarily doing their best work. But David Bowie was still putting out some great work.
Right. Innovation instead of, you know, retread.
Retread, exactly. That's what happens to a lot of artists that stay around for too long. They end up just trying to maintain more than just trying to put out new art. They end up just retreading. I'm not going to name any names here, but that, you know, that happens a lot. We'll see artists that stay around too long.
I need names. You need to name names.
There's probably some Paul McCartney albums we could have done without late in his career. I love Paul McCartney. He's one of the sweetest, nicest people, and I've heard from people that have met him. Mm-hmm. That confirm this. I've even almost been close to meeting him myself, but he probably put some stuff out late in his career. Michael Jackson certainly put out some terrible stuff late in his career, mm-hmm. but still put out a few good things in between. But it was, I talked about the Invincible album on this podcast, just one of the most overproduced albums. Had probably two really good songs on it, and then just a lot of songs on there with just a lot of explosion sound effects and lots of like sounds like spaceship doors closing and just a lot of unnecessary like overproduction. And so the irony is the two songs that actually worked on the album were songs that were the least overproduced, that were just music.
Now, can you be sure though that Michael Jackson wasn't producing that album on a spaceship where explosions were happening and doors were closing? I mean,
no, I can't.
Can you say for sure?
That's never been confirmed, and it's never been confirmed whether he was even maybe from another planet on his own.
Yeah, that's true. And maybe we should both do some more fact-checking.
Yeah, and I'll get back to you on it. You tell me what you come up with on that as well.
Yeah.
He's going to be one of the few artists that I think that we're not going to have to worry about these unreleased albums coming out.
That's quite possible. But in terms of having other unproduced material that maybe was still in the works, could definitely see that because he was quite prolific and enjoyed the production process so much as opposed to the touring process. Mm-hmm. Yeah, who knows? But I do hope it doesn't degenerate into that, oh, this is something found under rock and his executor decided to come in and finish up the lyrics for it and whatever.
We're going to get Justin Bieber to drop a piece on this, a little section on this David Bowie song. You know, it's interesting, his last album, The Black Star, it has a lot of the jazz influence in there. Apparently, yeah. He was heavily influenced by Kendrick Lamar's last album.
And makes complete sense again. He was always interested in new artists and...
Mm-hmm.
And some people would do that and just sort of lift influences. It's just kind of straight up thievery or impersonation, but I don't think of that with him.
No, I don't. I think he takes something and says, okay, I like this and I'd love to use it, but I'm going to completely turn it around in a creative way and use it mm-hmm. where it's not just retreading something. I was talking to a musician in New York and we were up there visiting family, and he said, yeah, it's like some of the top 40 music right now. It's just like the 50s where everything just sounds exactly the same. The instrumentals, it's not like that with David Bowie. It's like he takes, like, I like what he did, but I think I know how I can do that. Like, I'm inspired by that, not like wanting to just copy it.
Yes, at least that's what I think. You know, I'm sure people would argue against that, but I think he was just a creative spirit.
Yeah, but the person that would argue against that is always that jerky guy that would argue against everything and anything.
Probably.
And he would just do it because he just likes to do it. You know that guy?
I do.
It was so good to have you on. Tell me your link and your website again for Magic Lantern Podcast.
It was my pleasure to be on, and thank you so much for mentioning our podcast, which is the Magic Lantern Podcast. And you can find us at magiclanternpodcast.com. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Facebook, Twitter. Just search out Magic Lantern Podcast.
Yeah, it's an easy name to remember, the Magic Lantern Podcast. Well, I've got to go get on the horn and figure out how to talk a bride out of Total Eclipse of the Heart for the father-daughter song.
For the fate of the world, please talk her out of that.
And if I can't talk her out of it, then I'm going to make sure I have enough space on my phone so I can film it all and put it
on
YouTube so it can go viral and end up making it on one of those most awkward wedding.
Good idea.
On cable, I might be able to get, or I might be able to get some money on America's Funniest Home Videos this coming season.
Yeah, fingers crossed for that one, too. However it plays out.
I'll have to get a few shots of people in the audience reacting to it as it's happening, nudging each other, saying, you seeing this?
Yes. Thank you, Thunderpop.
Thank you. Keep thunderpopping.
Thunderpop was not recorded in front of a studio or audience.
Okay, I lied.
Thunderpop! 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 Oh, Thunderpop!
Oh, yeah. This was a Hit the Bricks production.